Hello and welcome to the first episode of the 2024 MLB season. This is it. This is number one. This is the first episode of the season, of like the regular season, at least a little bit earlier than usual because we have baseball this week. We have, okay, let me reorganize my words there. We have regular season baseball this week, which is crazy. We've had baseball for about a month and a couple of days now. Spring training is underway. We actually have a few other like extra games now with like the spring breakout that MLB is doing. So yeah, we have more baseball than usual. But we have regular season baseball this week. I am so excited to get things underway. Yes, watching spring training is tons of fun because we get to see a lot of prospects and guys that we don't really see a lot, but it's also nice to have a little bit of competitiveness in the game, and that's what we'll get this week. So this episode will kind of just be talking about the two games that we have coming up on Wednesday and Thursday, which is the Dodgers and Padres in Seoul, South Korea. I am so excited. We got some topics for you guys today. We're going to talk about just the whole MLB Seoul crossover we got going on, because this is the first time that they're playing in South Korea, which I think is super cool. We're going to talk about the Dodgers. We're going to talk about some of their additions to their roster, a few options, and what to watch for their team. We're also going to talk about the Padres. We're going to talk about Jackson Merrill, how he gets the starting spot at center field this year. There is a pitcher-heavy travel squad up in South Korea right now, and then what to watch with the Padres. And then we're going to just end it with some regular game day info for you guys, so you're all set for Wednesday and Thursday. So yeah, without further ado, let's get started into this first episode. I am so excited to kick things off. And let's just kind of talk about the whole game experience. So this is huge for MLB. MLB is doing a new thing. I don't think it's new because I know last season we did have like games in Mexico City. The Cubs and Cardinals played in London, which was super cool. But there are new countries this year, Seoul being one of them. And there were also two teams that played a couple of spring training games in the Dominican Republic as well. So that's super cool. But yeah, so first time in Seoul, South Korea, which is so cool for Major League Baseball, especially because there are emerging Japanese baseball players, not only in MLB, but especially on these two teams. And then just broader, like the Asian community is huge now in Major League Baseball. Obviously, you know, you have Otani, Yamamoto, some of those notable guys, but then guys on the Padres like Ha-Sun Kim, kind of a homecoming for him. And then another Asian baseball player, Woo Suk Go for the Padres. Love the name. So it's really cool to see kind of that horizon expanding culture-wise for Major League Baseball. And I think we saw, you know, now that both teams are kind of settling in Seoul, we're starting to see the Ohtani effect in action, which I think is super cool to see because obviously when Ohtani signed with the Dodgers, everybody knew this is huge. A global superstar in arguably the most famous city in the U.S., I mean, it's basically like this is close to what the Beatles are, right? And that's definitely what it was in the airport. So basically, if you don't know, the whole Ohtani effect is supposed to be kind of a thing where it creates more publicity, brings more fans to baseball. That's what everybody was hoping for with Ohtani signing with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have led MLB's attendance record for 10 consecutive years, and by signing Ohtani, this is beyond an acceleration of sales. I mean, they expect to be literally sold out every single home game. Even the away games are so expensive. I literally just bought tickets to the Cubs and Dodgers game at Wrigley Field to see Shohei. And let me tell you, they were not cheap. So yeah, I mean, the Ohtani effect is definitely in order, but to see this go globally is super cool to see. Obviously, both parties had to be, you know, had to consider this, and that's exactly what everybody wanted. It's great for baseball because it opens a new market and just, again, brings more fans to baseball, which, as we know, and I probably say it in every single episode, has been a struggle for many years. this is also super big for Shohei because he's a fans guy. He wants the sport to grow. And that's, you know, the whole reason behind the logistics within his contract and everything. So this definitely works out for everyone. So this is just super cool for not only Shohei, but for baseball in general. And with that, we have tickets. So buying tickets for this game was kind of complicated. Obviously, like, they sold them on, like, those, you know, your ticketing websites like StubHub. I don't even know if SeatGeek sold them, is selling them. But I know for sure StubHub was for a while. And then if you actually were a Padres season ticket holder, you were able to get, like, an exclusive, like, early deal. I think buyers were limited to, like, 2 tickets per an account. But you kind of got them at face value. And I heard that that was pretty much the only face value ticket option available because of, you know, everybody buying them. So I think right now, you know, going on StubHub for the first game, it's completely sold out. There is literally 1 ticket left for general admission on StubHub for the Thursday game, and it is $1,374. That is insane. That is US dollars. Like, that is the price you're paying in American dollars. Crazy. Of every 5 tickets StubHub has sold to Dodgers games in general this year, 1 has been bought by a fan in Japan, which I think is so cool because, again, it goes with the thing of growing the MLB market. But these tickets are super pricey. Obviously, like, resellers like this one on StubHub are selling them for a couple thousand dollars. And honestly, like, I get it. I'm not really surprised because it is in the Sky Dome, which is such a cool, like, stadium. That is probably, like, my number one of, like, global stadiums to go and visit. It just looks so cool in there. Especially because they don't only, you know, host baseball games, but they have concerts there as well. Anyways, these tickets, they aren't cheap. And the capacity for a baseball game at the Sky Dome is actually like 16,000, around 16,700, which is pretty low. So that's why I do expect the tickets to be a little bit more pricey just because not everybody could go. So yeah, tickets definitely outrageous. Now, when both the Dodgers and Padres arrived in the airport for the first time, it was literally crazy. It was like if One Direction was walking through the airport. It was Justin Bieber type stuff. It was literally the Beatles for both teams too, not only Shohei. So this was obviously expected because of, you know, the Asian baseball players and just those two teams being like such huge market teams. But fans camped out at the airport. They waited for both of their planes to arrive, and there were barricades, there was photographers, there was fans, everybody was there. They chanted every player's name, every single player. You got Freddie Freeman, you mean, I got Dave Roberts being chanted, Tatis. It was literally insane watching the videos. It was something that I definitely wanted to be a part of. Just so cool to see how not only, you know, the Asian baseball players are getting recognition, but, you know, the whole team as well. So it's definitely really cool. And Freddie Freeman actually says that it's, at first it was hard to get used to, but it's definitely kind of easier now because they had those large crowds at spring training too. So walking into the airport, I kind of think that they weren't really shocked per se because of the large crowds they're getting at spring training. I mean, you have people camping out at Dodgers spring training games. I mean, literally, even the Dodgers spring training games tickets are so expensive because people want to see Shohei. So it's so crazy because, I mean, literally, like, the exhibition games or, you know, spring training games used to be, like, I don't know, like, 20, 40 bucks, like, 30. Now, to go see a Dodgers game, you're literally paying the same amount as if you were going to go see a regular season game. So crazy stuff. But all in all, I do think it's good for Major League Baseball and it benefits the sport in general. So super excited for that. But another thing I wanted to touch on really quick, kind of in our intro segment, was Ohtani's wife. So as we know, Ohtani announced that he was married to somebody in his homeland of Japan, and he never said with who. He never disclosed any type of details or information. He just announced that he was married. Well, we found out who it was because it was revealed in a picture as they were about to board the plane to Seoul. They took a picture together, literally the cutest picture ever. And obviously everybody on Twitter, on Instagram was going crazy and people found her. So it is Mamiko Tanaka, I hope I'm saying that right, who is a former Japanese professional basketball player, which is so, so awesome. First of all, I didn't even know they had professional basketball for women in Japan, which is awesome. And okay, think about the kids. Think about their kids. I mean, literally these kids are going to be all-star athletes, superheroes. I could not stop thinking about that. But anyways, we found out who she was. She's an amazing, incredible person. So, super cool details. Anyways, let's talk about baseball. Let's move on and a little bit talk about these teams a little bit more in depth, starting with the Dodgers and starting with their additions that they had to their roster. So, there's a very good possibility that Kyle Hurt will be in the bullpen. He's originally a starting pitcher for the Dodgers, but if put in the bullpen, he can add a lot of depth. As for being a starter, Dave Roberts did say that they did want to stretch him out as a starter. Therefore, he's going to be kind of a bullpen guy. If he makes the roster, I'm pretty sure he will. Now, the Dodgers have been playing KBO teams for, I want to say, 2 days now, just to kind of get used to the things, get comfortable in Korea. And Hurt did pretty well. He struck out 5 in one of the exhibition games across 2 1/3 innings. So not bad stuff that he's put on so far, even in, spring training as well. A little bit more information about him. He was traded by the Marlins to the Dodgers in 2021, along with another Dodgers pitcher, Alex Vesia. And he's only played one professional game, and that was in 2023. He played for 2 innings, had 3 strikeouts, no hits or walks, but he's really heavy on his changeup and his 4-seamer. So he has been working a lot, and I do think, a lot of fans do believe he will get a roster spot this season, but probably not as a starting pitcher. See him in kind of that bullpen position. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. We're kind of going to get our first looks at that this week, so should be interesting. Another guy added to the roster, Daniel Hudson. So Daniel Hudson actually suffered a torn ACL that ended his 2022 season, and then sprained his right knee ligament in 2023, which also cut that season short. So he hasn't really been able to get a full season. This year might be the year, and he's got the stuff too. His fastball velo is actually in the mid-90s. He's a veteran guy. He's been in the league for a long time, 14 years. As of this year, I'm pretty sure maybe this will be his 15th, but I think he's definitely a veteran presence to the team in the bullpen for the pitching squad, and I think that's huge. Especially we know that the Dodgers like to have their homegrown players. They develop a lot of guys, and they're really good too. So to have a veteran guy in your pitching mix, just to kind of provide not just like the mechanic aspect to it, but also the morale and just that leadership position is huge. So I do think that's a great addition for the Dodgers in terms of pitching, just because I'm huge on the veteran presence. So those were a few additions to the roster going into this series, and they did actually have to option a few guys as well with that. So Miguel Vargas was optioned to minor league camp before heading to Seoul. He will remain eligible, and him being sent down doesn't determine if he will or will not be on the 40-man coming back to the U.S. So again, there's nothing set in stone and nothing final. He's dealt with a couple of injuries. His hand has kind of remained a problem. A lot of inconsistency at the plate. And now he's also learning how to play left field. So he's kind of being moved around a bit just to see which spots he performs the best in. But yeah, I mean, at the major league level, he has played 81 games, all at second base, and his batting average was about a 195 with 7 home runs, an OPS of 0.672, and an on-base percentage of 0.305. So definitely some low numbers that doesn't really obviously get the attention of many, and with Gavin Lux, with Mookie Betts now moving to the infield, it is kind of an infield that has their spots secured and has their set in stone positions. So not to say that Miguel Vargas wouldn't be called up anytime soon. I just do think that as for right now, the Dodgers kind of have a secure player in every position. Therefore, you know, he will not be starting with the team. So he gets optioned. Another guy optioned is Andre Lipschitz. I hope I'm saying that right. And he was designated for assignment in order to make room for Hudson. So again, a couple of guys optioned down doesn't mean that they're not going to get called up midseason in case any injuries happen or for whichever reason. But yeah, so definitely a few key aspects, especially there with Vargas, just because he kind of had a big role in the 2023 season. But now that Gavin Lux is back and hopefully 100% healthy, ready to play a full season, it kind of leaves him as the odd man out. So those are a couple of points there. Let's talk about what to watch going into this two-game series. We're going to see Mookie Betts settling in at shortstop, which is huge. This is the first time that he's going to be playing there for a full season. So far, he's played 4 games there. He's had 2 errors and 1 double play. It's going to take some getting used to. We don't expect him to adapt so quickly, but at the end of the day, he's Mookie Betts. He's always going to provide that bat for you. The defense is definitely something to work on, but I definitely have no questions into whether if he's going to get it or not get it. So it is going to take some time, like all things, but I do think that having him at shortstop is not going to be much of an issue for the Dodgers at all, and I think he could definitely, you know, see an all-star position there, which I know a few players are worried in because he is taking that all-star spot from a couple of them. But yeah, I do see him excelling in that position, but it's going to be interesting to see how that works out in a game that, or 2 games that really do count. Talking about that, let's talk about Yamamoto and Glasnow. Those are our 2 starters for the Dodgers in the Seoul series. Starting with Yamamoto, this could be huge. He has so far pitched 3 games this year with 9.2 innings and a 1.97 whip. So that's a higher whip than we'd like to see, or, you know, we as in Dodgers fans like to see. He's had 15 hits so far, 14 strikeouts, 4 walks with an ERA of 8.38. A lot of people are wondering, could this be the Dodgers' biggest flop? But let's be for real right now. It's way, way too early to tell. Are these the numbers that anybody would like to see? No, no matter the situation, obviously they're going to spark kind of like an exclamation point, an area of concern, but it's definitely not something to be freaking out about. It's going to be a learning experience. I mean, coming over from a whole different country to play against new players with new mechanics, everything is so different. So again, kind of almost it's a harder version of Mookie Betts settling in at a new position, because now you have Yamamoto settling in against, like I said, new players with just different hitting styles, and everything is so new and so different. So it will take a while for him to kind of get used to things. I don't think we should call this a flop yet, just because it is way too early, but it's going to be really exciting to see what the situation is with him this upcoming season and how he performs in that game with the Padres. So that's exciting. Talking about Glasnow, another guy who obviously he's a great pitcher, but there are a few concerns there as well. Nobody is going to be the Walker Buehler, or I hate to reference this, but Julio Urias of Dodger baseball anymore. So moving on to 2 pitchers who have never played for the for the Dodgers before, is kind of scary. But he currently has a 0.9 ERA. He has 14 strikeouts, a whip of 0.7. He's pitched 10 innings so far with about 1 earned run, no homers, only 4 hits. So again, really good numbers by Glasnow. Not as much of a concern like Yamamoto, but, you know, still the different environments, the different cultures, things like that. I kind of really don't have any worries for Glasnow. I think the biggest thing is how many innings is he going to give you? So that's kind of really my only area of concern. But besides that, I'm interested to see what he's got and how he can do in this first real game. Moving on to another thing to watch, the 5th rotation spot. So right now it's hopeful, and I'm pretty sure we can all just write his name in. It's probably going to be Gavin Stone until Walker Buehler is ready and healthy. He is a young top prospect. He looks pretty promising. He's played in 3 games. He has a 0.62 whip, an ERA of 0.93, 9 strikeouts, 5 hits, and only 1 walk. So he could be that fifth rotation spot for the Dodgers, as long as Walker Buehler is not, you know, he's still undergoing a few things, and until he's healthy, we could see Gavin Stone in there. So that should be pretty interesting to see. Obviously, we probably won't see him play in Korea, but as we get further into the season, could see some stuff with him. But yeah, just wanted to mention that. Moving on to the San Diego Padres, who we have kind of a lot to talk about here too. Jackson Merrill will get the starting spot at center field. This is going to be his first time at center field, previously a shortstop. This is kind of huge because I don't know if this starting spot is going to be super set in stone. I do think that he will be the primary center fielder, but the Padres are also in the mix for Tommy Pham. So if the Padres sign Tommy Pham, could this kind of, you know, differ where Jackson Merrill stands? Merrill is a rookie. He is just the third player in the last 50 years to be starting center field on opening day before the age of 21. So definitely a young guy, but he has made a lot of improvements. He's cut down that ground ball rate from 59.6% to 42.5%. He will probably hit near the bottom of the lineup just because he's a lefty and he falls into that Padres pattern of ready lefty in the batting order. So far, batting average of .351, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, an OPS of .995, an on-base percentage of .400. So I'm really excited to see what he can do. He played yesterday in that Padres exhibition game with the KBO team, and he had a good hit there. I saw probably a couple more, so super excited to see what he can do in that spot, and yeah, hopefully it goes well. Moving on, let's talk about how the Padres have brought a lot of pitchers to Korea. There are currently 17 pitchers on the roster. They need to cut about 4, and they also need to cut 1 position player by March 20th. So that's in 2 days, because the roster needs to be down to 26. They are expected to carry an 11-man bullpen, so that's probably why they brought so many pitchers. And then they also have the newest pitcher in town, Dylan Cease, who made the trek solo, actually, because he found out that he was getting traded right when the Padres were taking off. So he did have to fly to Korea himself, but he made it to the team. He made it with the team. He actually pitched yesterday in that exhibition game, and he did pretty good. He pitched for 2 innings, only let up 1 home run, but did have 2 strikeouts. His stuff looked great. The command was there as well, and no walks. So interesting to see how he fits into the Padres pitching staff, but then also how he will perform in these 2 games, because I don't know if we'll see a lot of him. Maybe if something happens with Darvish or something happens with Musgrove where, you know, they can't get through a lot of innings, we'll probably see Cease. But I think the biggest thing was trying to get him some reps with the team as he just got traded. So yeah, going to be interesting to see there. What to watch with the Padres. So again, Cease will probably get a few innings if, you know, something goes wrong with those 2 starting pitchers for the Padres. And then how the team performs without Soto. These are going to be the first 2 regular season games without Soto, meaning Bogarts, Tatis, and Machado all need to step up. And I think they are more than capable of doing that. It's just getting just the right stuff and the right timing as well. Tatis having a down year, Bogarts also not performing his best, Machado as well. Those are three heavy hitters, and for them to all be in that lineup for the Padres, you expect a lot. So those guys definitely do need to step up, and I think Bogart said it himself, like, they lost a couple home runs with Soto leaving, so now having to make that up is definitely going to be hard, but I have no doubts that they do have the capabilities of doing it if they are Wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't really turn out their way. But yeah, so that's just some things to watch with the Padres going into these two games this week. So yeah, that's really what I have for those two teams and kind of just a, you know, a synopsis of what's going on there. Some game day info. Again, those games will be played in Seoul, South Korea, Wednesday and Thursday. It's going to be 5 a.m. Central Time. And then you can transfer that to whatever time zone you're going to be watching in. But I know for me, I'm going to have to wake up early before school and catch those games at 5 a.m. Your starting pitchers for game one and two. For game one, you're going to have Glass now and Darvish. It's going to be a super good matchup. And then for game two, Yamamoto and Musgrove. So seeing some of those, I guess, quote unquote, veteran pitchers for the Padres, but then those new guys for the Dodgers. So it's going to be a super, super fun series to watch. Definitely tune in. Both of those games will be on ESPN. So stay tuned for those. And yeah, I'm super excited to see that. Just again, I know we've had baseball for a month and a couple days now, but seeing competitive baseball is going to be super refreshing. And I'm just going to, you know, makes me more excited for the regular season to actually start in the U.S. and for things to get rolling here. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to the first episode of the 2024 season. I will be back with another episode, I'm pretty sure next week, kind of just recapping everything and then talking about some other things baseball related. But yeah, and then we'll see a lot more episodes coming in as we get into April, and we got a lot more games going on. So yeah, thank you guys again so much for watching, and you'll hear from me soon. Bye.